July 17, 2021, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Mm-hmm.
from Pedro Show. Happy Saturday. Start off the show Saturday with John Coltrane doing I Hear a Rhapsody. And then Leah P., who, like Mother Superior, jumped the gun. You could tell people I'm not man alone. Brother Master at the Love Garden, the Love Point, Pleasure Point. Sorry, fucking that up. But because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got Matt and Leah Purse.
That's right.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this music, too. We got to thank fucking the special Brutal Sound Effects crew. That's what it is.
Yep, and many thanks to Brutal Sound Effects crew for putting this together, yeah, making it happen.
Thank you.
Making the connect. And I'm really interested on how you got together to make this sound. So I want to go through each one of your journey through music in a concise way. So who wants to go first?
I will go first.
Okay. Matt, please bring your earliest musical recollection, please.
Earliest musical recollection is I was born in Detroit. My dad was a disc jockey, and he was a jazz disc jockey. So what ends up happening is at the time, I was really into Kiss, you know? And I think he was like, yeah, but there's good music. And so my earliest memory was he brought over a giant box of 45s. And he's like, this is, you know, actually what I think you should study if you're going to be serious about music fandom. And I'm like, nah, I just like Kiss. That's all I like. And he respected that, but he was like, nah, just give this a chance. And I think he always tried to convince me how jazz was better, but I needed to figure that out on my own, and I didn't gravitate towards the jazz record. So then he goes, well, here's a song called Eleanor Rigby, and I think if you study this, you'll see it's actually better written, better performed. And I just wasn't hearing it until years later, and I was like, come on, leave me alone, I just want Detroit Rock City. And he was right, obviously, because it's terrible. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the way you get to where you are now, sometimes it ain't your choice. Sometimes it is other people trying to choose, but sometimes it's just the reality of the situation that adds up to all these kind of coincidences and trippy shit. You know, without friction, right, a tire just spins. The car don't move. A farmer would tell you if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. So, I mean, who knows? That stuff that he was supplying you with was some kind of meal for some grist or grist for some meal. He was a DJ, so there's always a lot of music in the house, but like, listen, there's no players.
Yeah, he always, well, my mom had a piano, but like never played it, but he was a singer too. So what he would do is he would host his jazz show, and then if Sarah Vaughan came through or Billie Holiday or anybody came through, Dizzy Gillespie came through, he would be on the bill and singing as like an opening act, and then he would introduce them as the MC of the show. So yeah, I was definitely always around as that goes. I just didn't.
So there was a piano in the pad. Did you ever jump on it?
Absolutely. I just you know, banged away at it, and I didn't understand what I was supposed to do at it. And then later they got me a guitar.
Well, let me ask you about the piano, because, you know, a lot of cats on the show, there was the hell of the piano lessons. Did you have that?
Zero. No, I had guitar lessons. I think the piano, and this is a sad part of it, had to be sold because both parents were out of work for a while. So I think that got sold and was never talked about again. So.
Okay, but they got your guitar. It's a little more portable, a little more economical.
There you go, yeah.
And you did go through the lesson trip. How was that experience for you, Matt?
It was frustrating because they... it was in a place called Royal Oak, Michigan, and they wanted to teach
I was there once.
Yeah, I bet.
Get this. No, I can't remember exactly when, but it was during the Dr. Kevorkian thing. By accident or chance, I was just there where a reporter asked me my ideas on, you know, volunteer suicide.
Yeah.
So that's how I know that area. Just a little bit of con hair, you know. So what was the first record you bought with your own money? Was it Kiss, Destroyer?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it was.
Okay. And the first gig you went to see?
Actually, Kiss at Cobo Arena. And I was way too young, but my dad, through the radio station, was able to get tickets way in the back, but... my memory of that was that the lights went down and my fear went up proportionate to the sound. You know, the crowd, and they have that kind of, you know, you wanted the best, you get the best. And I'm like, oh, there's no going back. Like, I fucked up. I shouldn't be here. I don't think I can handle this. Like, I don't know what to expect.
Well, some of that Cobo Hall ended up on both the Kiss Alive 1 and 2, right?
That's one and two.
I don't know really two that well, but I remember the first one. It was kind of muddy, but it had all the songs. And they were playing so slow. Like, you know, me and D. Boone, we saw those cats about four or five times opening up for people before they even had their record out. We only saw them once, and it was that record you're talking about. But I remember when the first album came out, it seemed so slow. So, what about, let me ask about the school thing. Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
I was in the marching band with a bandmate of yours called Steve Perkins.
One of the most righteous people I've ever gotten to ever play with.
Me too.
But not Detroiter, not a Detroiter, a Val.
That's right, he was a Val. So we moved to California when I was like 9 years old, and being Irish Catholic, I always went to private school, so that found me at Notre Dame High School. And so in the marching band, I played tuba, Perk played the tritoms, Dave Navarro played.
Dave was his buddy, and they had a hard rock band on the side.
Disaster. Oh, that was the main thing, man. We used to clown him because it was disaster with a Z.
Yeah, I know. I know. Perk showed me pictures. I mean, I didn't know him at the time. I didn't know him until, like, what, early 90s? But beautiful man. I've gotten to play so many things. You know, his Banyan band, up four albums with him, and he's just incredible. I got to help out with Porto for Pyro, and it's still in my life big time with Peter and Hellride, huh?
That's right.
Even he's written words for this stuff. Okay, you were on the tuba, so you were working some bass clef.
That's right, the sousaphone, which is a little harder than the tuba, but yeah, so there are
wraps around you. What's a little easier to carry?
So I had a plexiglass tuba, and that was just to keep me in school, because band, you kind of get an A if you just showed up. And so that helps float my GPA and kind of keep me enrolled.
Also, prac, right? You get to do prac. Did you learn how to read?
Yeah. That actually was where I was like, well, I got to do it, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I heard about the marching thing, the bone and the low end shit like that had the big mouthpieces. So marching was, you know, the little mouthpieces like trumpet and especially French horn, fucking really hard to walk with, march with.
Yeah,
that's what my buddies told me. I never did it. I never. But you know, whatever you were working, those fucking wool suits. You know, I go to the New Year China Lunar Parade, and they'll have dudes. Even Pedro schools will come up there and march. And you see them in those big wool fucking thick things.
It's hell, man. It's hell. I nearly passed out more times than I can remember.
Okay, Matt. What do you do after school? Not like graduate, but in the afternoon. The garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band?
I'll tell you what was it. We went home and watched Public Access. So it was wrestling and Wally George, if you remember the Wally George
thing. Yeah, Orange County. But you mean you didn't do music for fun?
Yeah, but it's not worth talking about. It was terrible.
He won't talk about it. I didn't trouble if I talk about it, so.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Okay, I'll embarrass myself instead, okay? I only wrote one song as a teenager. It was called Mr. Bass, King of Outer Space, and it was about doing a bass solo and blowing the rest of the band off stage, okay?
I already think it's better than anything
else. We had a band called the Bright Orange Band, and all we did was copy Blue Oyster Cult and some McCreans and Alice Cooper because nobody in those days wrote their own songs till the movement. Fucking did. Here, I want to play from I don't know the makeup yet of the thing, but this lists only Leah P, and it's something called Greased Rubber. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. We start off that chunk of music with Leah Pete and Greased Rubber. Then brand new from Midwife, Colorado. Wharton Tears from his new release, Poli Sci. Wharton Tears, beautiful man. Drummer man, also ran Studio Fun City, New York, 80s. Got to record Bob Quine. Parallel System, System 26 from the Rabuton Project. This has got Brian Lucas, Howard Stelzer, Ali Robertson, Glenn Galloway, and Eric Hardiman. And Salamander, Threadbare Reason, Front, Fifi Armageddon from Bombers Prendon. Sam Locke Ward featuring Andy Cattell with I Cannot Face You. Al Margolis with Nights in the Forest. And finally, again, Leah P. with Untitled Stray Dog number 2. Leah, it's your turn now. Since Matt refuses to talk about any more of his embarrassing shit. Now it's your turn. Let me use the fucking mental pry bar on your privacy. Now, remember, it's a Watt for Pedro Show. There are no hard questions and there's no wrong answers. So please bring your earliest musical recollection.
My earliest recollection of music?
I think that was the question.
Okay, I couldn't hear you. Matt was talking to me at the same time.
Okay, that's what backhands were invented for. Nah.
You know, I'm just going to say Billy Corgan. Like, that's the first thing that comes to mind is Smashing Pumpkins when I was just, 12 years old. Okay. But prior to that, I mean, it was just, like, my mom, whatever she was playing, which was usually, like, The Police or Sting or Elton John. And my dad played a lot of, like, country classic stuff, but I couldn't even tell you what that was or anything.
Well, but let me ask you like I asked Matt. Was there instruments in the pad?
There was, but I wasn't really allowed to play with them. Okay. My mom was into the piano because of Elton John, and she did teach piano lessons.
What about you?
A little bit, but
what about you? Did she teach you?
What's that?
Did she teach you or try to?
She tried to, but she was such a crazy lady that, you know, it was just something that didn't continue. So, yeah.
Well,
didn't go on.
Can I ask if there was Independence Day? Did you hide? Well, you weren't allowed, so you had to sneak. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
Siamese Dream.
That's that singer.
That's Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, so that's it.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, and the first gig you saw?
The very first one, my dad took me to New Kids on the Block, but we weren't really into it, so we left. We left really early. We were just like,
but you know what? New Edition was a little better. I think they had the same manager.
Yeah. We were both just like, this was really silly. There's like these 20-year-old dudes running around with their shirts off and
yeah, but I wonder if that didn't happen, would there be K-pop today?
Ooh.
Especially not just them, but Mike Jackson especially. But after them, I think some in the Disney farm system, the way you bring up kids, why they have the Jackie Coogan laws. You know, because parents milking their kids. Britney's having a big war with her daddy now over this. So what about at school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
Probably up until I got too cool for school. Yes, I was in choir. I was really into singing, even though I'm not a good singer.
Yeah, but there's something about it, right? Expressing yourself, getting out feelings. And
I think so. I think it was an excuse to do something after school and not be home.
Okay. Or the other classes in school that might not be as fun, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Did you do any of this garage band, bedroom band, basement band? Not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon.
Not really. Also, like, just kind of being over school so early in life, I was more concerned on, like, helping my older friends throw these raves in Tucson, Arizona. So I was just more, like, into, I guess, the structure of setting up festivals as my free time as a teenager. I don't know a better way.
No, it's really important. People think it's all about the people on the stage, but what about the people who build that stage?
that's
you know what I mean? I think it comes from, well, it's just a human thing, but it really gets reinforced by these remote controls. We think the whole world works this way. I should change the channel, you know, that's all it does.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you just press a button and things happen, you know, all these men behind the curtain. Okay. So that's still part of making a gig, I think, a gig maker.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, man, how did you guys meet?
Oh, me and Matt. I was working at a coffee shop in his neighborhood, and Matt would angrily come in every day, sometimes three times a day, and order like 8 shots of espresso. And I'm not even lying, even though he was a total jerk, I was like, that is my future husband. it was really weird, but yeah.
It wasn't a musical connect.
No, but our first dates were definitely completely revolved around that. And I think because we had such specific niche interests that it just was like a natural thing. Like one of our first dates was a noise versus like crustcore show in a friend's like basement before he built it up into a studio. And we went to like a boutique pedal shop, I think, as our very first date. Yeah.
Pedals. You mean devices for like guitars?
Yeah, like effects pedals for guitars and stuff.
Because at this time, Matt, you were working guitar, right?
Well, no, I mean, by this time that when Lee and I met, I had shed any interest in doing music or even listening to music. So I was really dedicated to just anything that I could either build my own instrument or use a pedal to create noise experimental, if you will.
The pedal treating the sound, it's actually the source of the sound.
Yeah.
That's precisely right. Okay. Yeah. So having been a fan of it in the 90s, you had Mason Jones on recently, I would say.
Yeah. He was very cool people.
Very, very. And so at the time, like in the 90s, that's what I would follow, like Mason's label and, you know, just whatever's going on in LA at the time, which wasn't a lot. It was like Solid Eye, LA FMS, Damian Romero, and obviously Caroliner. When they would come down here.
Is that Rick Potts?
Yeah, Rick Potts.
And his brother, and right?
Yeah, Rick and Joe.
Always been on the experimental. So, let me ask you, what was it personal? It was Mason Jones's music. I'm trying to find out the gateway drug.
Oh, the gateway drug was John Zorn. So
John Zorn. Yeah.
I was into like everybody. I go from Husker Du, Minutemen, to Sonic Youth. I discover Sonic Youth through SST, obviously, and Dinosaur. And then from there, I'm into John Zorn and whatever anyone can send me from Pure Platter in New Jersey or whatever's happening on the East Coast. And I go to Aaron's Records, and my friend Damien, you probably know Damien Romero from Slug.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing the experimental buying there, and he's like, well, if you like John Zorn, you're going to love Yamatsuka Eye and The Boredoms and UFO or Die and Hana Trash, and proceeded to load me down with like every import CD. And I guess he was getting them from Mason, who would travel to Japan, and
that's
then he would bring them back.
He discussed some of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
Told
yeah.
Me so put
that,
out,
Makoto
Kawabata's first solo record, Mainliner, right? And I just got to record with him and Scotty Irvin, trading files. But let me ask you this, Matt. Was this like, I want to listen to all this stuff, or I want to make music? Not copy them, but I want to be part of this.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? It's like I could try to copy music. I mean, that's the easy thing. You can learn the chords to a song or whatever, but you can't necessarily copy noise. But I think my aim was to shed myself of any musical. Like my instinct was to provide a beat or a musical element to something I wanted to shed that. Like I still to this day, I there's noise and noise music, and I think the two are totally different. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know. I that was my aim, was to shed any musical anything. It's still
musical. You mean like what came before? But like what I'm guessing is like you're feeling like this is a bunch of cliche shit.
You know, at the time I kind of did. I mean, look.
I understand. I got involved with the movement for the same reason. But
right.
The different primer. The primer was arena rock. Okay.
But it's the same thing
because it's kind of a rock and roll killer. You know, it's just too full of fucking rules and shit.
Totally. And so So the line, "This is Bob Dylan to me," doesn't mean you're going to imitate Bob Dylan, or it doesn't mean, it just means it hits the same as Bob Dylan must have hit to the people when Bob Dylan was, you know, 61. So to me, you know, Merch Bow is Bob Dylan to me, you know, whatever.
Here's a Bob Dylan thing. Yeah. Ron Ashton, right? His birthday's today.
Oh, yeah.
And also, this is day John Coltrane passed away. So, but any, it's weird about that. But Ronnie told me seeing Bobby Dylan at his high school, and he had a corduroy coat, smoked a pipe, 16 years old. Yeah, Ron Ashton, Stooges guitar. Yeah, it's a trip how we get to where we're at. But we're at the end of the first hour. July 17, 2021, Dish of Wap Pedro Show. Special guests Matt and Leah. Hold tight for hour two. July 17, 2021, it's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show. I'm going to go to the next one.
the traditional exchange of gifts. The ash was excellent. And we fell down like snow, uncontrollably. We melted, inconsolably. 100 blood tests. I wish I could reach out and pluck you from the sky, an eye for an eye. Helpless introspection. I'll try again. It might be time. To be honest. Snow started to fall. You barely spoke to me at all. All swaddled up. In seriousness. Where'd you go?
Thank you.
show. Started the second hour off with Slogger, Leah Pete. Then Ben Salter with The Ash Was Excellent out of Tasmania. Lucas Abella from nearby Sydney with Waterloo. And Leah P. with Jerk Circuit. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So there's the coffee shop encounter, the coffee therapy for anger.
Yeah.
Treatment, anger management.
Yeah.
Get even more fucking nervous. Okay. But after you break the ice with that shit, when do you start collaborating musically together?
I think that was probably just from everybody asking when that was going to happen. You know, nobody's asking about the babies. They're just asking when we're actually going to collab. So it finally happened in, what, 2015?
Maybe. I mean, yeah.
This is way after the visit to the pedal shop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've been hanging out for a while, and I was very, very, like, on the foundation of, you know, working more just really solo and independently on my own so I can make sure I have a well-developed foundation for my own project, and then, you know, just making sure that that was solid on its own. And I think maybe Matt was probably feeling the same way, and then it just eventually kind of happened, I think, when we eventually became very comfortable in our own foundations and who we are as individual artists, and then being able to come together and not having to, what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, like, not having to change our sounds to meet together, but just having our own individual sounds just meet really well together. So I think it just happened kind of perfectly in the way it was meant to happen.
Not really a compromise, more of a dog pile.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's just like, now, you know, he has his own chaos style, and I definitely have my own. And it's just like two people who are very, like, stubborn naturally anyways, just kind of like, you know, butting heads, but with sound.
Now, did it start with performances, or was kind of a prac band at first?
Oh, I kind of feel like it was, wasn't it Grux who was like, y'all got some more time for the show, like,
yeah.
Just play together.
We played up in, at the God Waffle Pancake.
The Rainbow thing. Bridge place.
And we performed individually. And then, yeah, he said, go ahead and you guys just play together. And so I think that might have been the first time.
Like, so there was no, like, you know, two people alone in a pad just pracking. This is the first time you actually was in front of people.
Yeah, we just kind of got forced into it. Rux is really good. Like, not many people talk me or Matt into anything. But he's pretty good at just, like, being like, okay, and now you do this.
Now, what was our first gig like?
It was really fun, and it was comfortable, and it was, I don't know, I just like the space, and Rux is really good at making you feel comfortable when you're doing something.
Maybe him foisting that situation on you. You didn't have time to be kind of apprehensive or make expectations.
Uh-huh. Probably. I can see that.
But we did practice after that, because then we played the International Noise Conference. So we did go and, like, rent out a rehearsal studio and do that.
Well, would you think that event, or that voice by Grux, was the kind of the launching pad, springboard?
I would think for actually doing sounds together.
Yeah,
definitely the diving board for that one. Yeah.
Okay, let's dive off into the surveillance capitalist tune.
There you go.
Actually, this has got a different band here. This says Unsubstantial Social Condition.
That's me.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Unsubstantial Social Condition with Surveillance Capitalists. You ever wonder why after your fake look visit, you're seeing shit you're hankering for?
Yeah.
Schneller, Troller, Meyer after that from Switzerland. Tectonics, a sore point. That's a Swiss way of being funny, right? Emmanuel, with California people. Yeah, they're a great catcher on the show last month. Manuel Armida, the guy from Mexico City, but he's living up in Yellowknife, Northwest Territory. Not even a province or state, people, right? Beautiful though, I was up there once. Ramblin' Rumble. And finally, again, Unsustainable Social Condition with Live at OCHI. Yeah, OCHI Soup. Now, Matt, you got to enlighten us to what this Unsustainable Social Condition unit is about.
Yeah, it's just my solo efforts at doing Harsh Noise. I mean, it's every song title and every even the kind of ridiculous name of the act is kind of meant to be. A piss take on not taking myself too seriously.
But kind of provocative?
Yeah, totally provocative at the same time. Yeah, exactly right. I mean, everything's a social commentary.
But on the other hand, it's like humor is our savior.
Yeah, so like, I mean, like, you can't say a track. It seems ridiculous to give a track a title because they should all be untitled. It's like you wouldn't hear, I don't think I'd hear a Harsh Noise track and then be able to tell you the name of it. So the names are like chapter titles for me, and whatever it is that is on my mind at the time comes out in the chapter title.
And when do the titles come? After you compose or before?
Yeah. After, absolutely, yeah.
I ask that because Wad has to do it before. That's how I write songs.
Really?
I know everybody fucking says. You know, there's two things I know I can get a reaction. If I tell them that I write titles first, and then the first gig me and D. Boone saw is T-Rex.
Wow.
See, holy. I could say both those things, and I'll always get
that. I mean, that is kind of, both are incredible. I feel like
maybe because I compose on bass, I need a title to, like, give me an anchor point so I can bring everything to focus to aid and abet to realize that tune.
And that's true with every, with every iteration of any song you ever write. That's crazy. I didn't know.
Yeah. Well. You know, bass is where you put the lane guy anyway or something. It's like right field little league. Anyway, so how long has Unsubstantial Social Condition been going on?
Well, 2015 was the first show. It started as a offshoot of another solo thing I was doing called Finian. And that was more like tape loops and found like springs and magnets and but I wanted to do something extremely harsh noise or noisecore or both at the same time. So yeah, I started probably about then just doing live stuff, and I recorded the first release with a drummer called Josh Taylor, who was in Friends Forever, and what was the other thing?
I want to say that one
again. Oh man, he's a great drummer. So we just recorded a bunch of drum noises in his. It was Foot Village. So I just recorded his drums in his garage, and then I went and I just cut them all up. I just cut it up so that you couldn't recognize it as drums unless you really leaned into it. So that was kind of the beginning of that. But now it's almost exclusively harsh noise with almost no detectable movement, but it's ever changing. So yeah.
And there's, you don't use another human being again.
No. I'm not against it, but yeah, in the beginning I played with Josh and then another guy called Kieran Aurora when we did live shows. Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough to like, cause then you want to, get together to practice, but that becomes really difficult. People living all over and stuff, so, and expensive, so.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, it fit me.
Just the portability of being a man alone proj.
Yeah, and right, for traveling and touring, so when we go to Japan, it's just easy. It's just two suitcases and have a good time. So much easier, yeah, no doubt.
Right. And does unsustainable social condition ever collab with Leah P?
No, when we do collab, it's called Of the Skull. So that's kind
of...
you
didn't send me any of that.
No, I didn't, because you know what? We've never recorded anything.
Yeah, we don't have any recorded.
It's exclusively live acts.
You mean
so.
You haven't recorded yet?
There you go. Well, maybe you'll be the conduit for that. Maybe you'll force a recording upon us.
Okay, that's right. We're at the end of the second hour, July 17, 2021. Just what Peter's special guest, Lee and Matt. Hold tight for our freak! July 17, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro show. We'll be right back. for Pedro show. Start off the third hour. Fanion. This was the predecessor to Unsustainable Social Condition, people. And a tune called Phenomenology. After that, from Fukuoka, the Born Shit Stirs. And the plural vinyl is vinyls. And I'm actually on that. The one note that everybody's playing together for, I think it's a 16th note. Or an 8th
note. Nice.
Kenny Kyle. I'm still under mix. It's kind of mime. Unsustainable Social Condition with Rat Lines. Is this the Rat Lines I get the Nazis at into Latin America and shit?
That's exactly what it is. Okay. I do a lot of reading. And I think I got that one from a great book called Devil's Chessboard.
Really heavy, right? They maybe the Vatican's really weird. I've read some stuff about that.
And,
those were intense times, late 40s.
Yep.
So that informs a lot of your compositions and stuff, your literature?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is it fiction and nonfiction or just nonfiction?
I'm almost exclusively nonfiction.
Like D. Boone.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I never really read history till I met him, except Encyclopedia. And then I really got into it because he liked it. So, Fanion, what you gave me here was an older piece. Or is it still active proj?
It's not active, but it could be at any time. It just hasn't been active for a very long time because I need to find a way to make a sound under that moniker and be happy with it. But, yeah, it's not been active for a minute.
You mean there's... As Man Alone, you have two ways. You have the Fanion way and the Unsustainable Social Condition way?
That's exactly right, yeah. Okay.
And then when you collab, there's another way with Leah?
That's exactly right. Although I would say it's indistinguishable what I'm doing with Leah from Unsustainable Social Condition. It's totally indistinguishable.
And to prove that point, I want to play Human Salvage.
Thank you.
Rove Show, last music for this edition. Unsustainable Social Condition with Human Salvage. Then Uns, which was a side project for the great late Zav. Incredible cat, mainly a percussion man, but this was a side project. Blake Edwards we had on the show a little while ago, and he took care of Brother Zev in his last years with the cancer and shit, and he provided me with a lot of this stuff. This is from Ritzy Cinema in Brixton, England, October 2nd, 1982, part 2 of 2. Yesterday was part 1. When you look at a thing, it's kind of a spiel, proj, more than the percussion. You know, he would hang these pieces of metal and almost get killed by the shit as he was doing the performance.
He was...
I think there's some video. I think Target Video up in the city did some Zev. One reason why I always, and maybe why Blake Edwards sent me all this stuff, and I'm such a fan, because getting into the movement, you know, it wasn't just fast guitars. I'm nothing wrong with fast guitars and funny haircuts, but it was like, let anything happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Zev was one of the examples of that by doing, not just a slogan, but he put it into practice. And, you know, he one of the really pioneers. And if, you know, down the road was emo and power pop or punk. Or,
yeah.
I don't think we can blame cats like him.
No.
And no. Always got to remember, Pat Boone sold more Tutti Frutti's than Little Richard. It's just humans, you know. Where's the fucking justice? When the last poets would tell me, just us is just us.
Just yeah. Us
there. So, Leah.
Yeah.
The next Leah P. You said one of the first tunes I played on today's show was from the new record.
Yes.
Well, let's hear about the new record.
Oh, okay. So, it's basically usually don't have a very thought out concept or anything like that when I do a release. It's usually just kind of my standard cut up noise. But with this one, we had recently lost our English bulldog of 11 years.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just really having a hard time with all those aspects that come with grief when you lose somebody that you love so much. So it just kind of just, you know, when I was feeling like a loss of identity, because I, you know, this dog was my freaking life. Like anybody who's known anything about me and Matt over the last 11 years knows that Dougal, the bulldog, he was our life. So, excuse me. But yeah, it just was recorded under like feelings of lost identity, you know, just worrying about his journey in the afterlife. Certain moments, like Greased Rubber is literally about a time that I had left a bunch of balloons on the floor after a birthday party for Matt and just let this dog just destroy all these balloons. And it was just so crazy sounding and just so funny. And then, you know, just various things that you process and go through when you're grieving. So that's basically the whole album.
So in a way, it's kind of tribute or a memorial to him?
Yes, definitely. Definitely, definitely. He was such a cool dude, and he just, you know, wanted to hang out and go to shows. And if it wasn't too loud, he would actually go in and watch people play. And he just, you know, he was really in the scene. And we have actually performed with him and let him go after a big piece of sheet metal and, you know, scratch his butt with little contact mics and get sound from just petting him. And he was just a fun little dude. So, yeah, it's definitely in tribute for him.
And I think when a work is connected to a life force like that, it gives it another perspective.
Yeah, it's definitely a different peek, I guess, at who I can be as an individual artist and a lot of vulnerability that I don't let come out at all in that kind of way.
Now when you perform this stuff, in a way, those feelings, but maybe people don't know exactly, right? You're not wearing them on your shirt sleeve. You're using them as a part of your expression.
Yeah, definitely. So it's been really cool. I'm really proud of this release, even though it's different. I was scared because, you know, that even releasing something so vulnerable for me was still another kind of avenue of being vulnerable, where it was like, oh, now I feel like I'm really exposing myself, and what if people are like, oh, this sucks? And
well, really, it took me 12 years to write about, you know, losing Dee Boone, you know. It took 12 to get the courage up to do the first opera. I'm not saying I exactly know what you mean, but it is, yeah, it is scary. It is.
Sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a little time. Like Mr. Wells said, right? No wine before it's time. speaking of time, how long did it take you to record the whole baby?
Oh, gosh, probably just a few months, because it was coming out so fast. And I have a really, really hard time recording. I don't like it. I don't like putting out releases. It's a permanent record, you know, for forever. It's like, you know, so.
You mean as opposed to a gig that goes into the air.
Yeah. And a lot of times I would prefer to just have my live gigs as my releases, because that's when I know I can't fuck up. Like, I have to do my best. Sometimes that doesn't happen, but, you know, if I had a choice, I would prefer to release just live.
That was a big motivation for us young Minutemen, you know, the idea of the gig. Even putting out records, they were just flyers to get people to the gig. The gig was everything. It was everything. But now when I look back, it is, you know, if I want to hear Dee Boone, at least there's a record. You know, if we didn't do them, it'd be all stuff that's in the air. So, you know, like a lot of human things, it's mixed up with stuff. So I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find out about you and Matt on the internet?
Do you want to give them, because I'm not sure the exact.
Yeah, so, I mean, just a Google search for Oxen Records.
You mean a search engine search.
You're right.
You're right. We're already working for them without even getting paid.
Of all people, I'm spouting this shit. A search engine.
You know who really gets rough on that? Ian MacKay. He won't.
No kidding. No plugging the corporation. Well, that's all right.
It's okay.
Busted.
But is there a Matt and Leah website?
No, it's all Oxen Records. Because in addition to doing noise, we also do a noise label.
Yeah.
It happened to.
Well,
let
me know that. OXEN.com?
It's OXEN-label.
Okay, OXEN-hyphen, people. LADEL.com.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's great. So you release other folks too. Okay.
Absolutely.
To get the news on them. And then, if you're going to revitalize Fidian? Well, if you do, come back. No, I'm putting this invite out to you, Matt. Come on the show and we'll talk about it.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, you should do
Fidian. Okay. Aaliyah Fidian. Yeah, that'd be. I mean, you know, the possibilities are endless.
I know. We could talk about James Connolly. We could talk about Patrick Pearce and all that stuff.
Absolutely. And Perk. Love that man. Love. People, it's been July 17, 2021. It is why Pedros will keep you powder dry.